different and so new was like any other until I kissed you.
Back to another edition of Broomsticks and Butterbeer, episode number 161. That's un, say un.
Okay.
I'm Dan Rhino.
I'm Jessica Rhino.
And that was our Duolingo French for the day.
Oh, okay.
Un, say un.
Si.
That is right, isn't it? Un, deux, trois, quatre, cinq, six. Did I say cease or cease?
I think you did both. So one thing and one the other.
So I did a little Spanish for you too, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
This is a Harry Potter podcast, though.
We're
going chapter by chapter through the Harry Potter novels, and we are getting to the very end of book number 6, which is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And we're going to recap chapter 28 and talk about chapter 29. The penultimate chapter is what I call it. It's a word I made up, which means second to last.
Yeah, I've heard you use that word before.
Yeah, it's my word.
I just said, is this the second to last chapter?
I got a Slurpees, and I haven't taken hardly any drinks out of mine, and mine's halfway gone.
Yeah, it melts.
It's a little melty.
It's a little melty.
Melty action going on here. Before we get into chapter 28 and eventually chapter 29... how was your Fan Expo Chicago experience?
I had fun.
Can you expand more on that?
We've done Fan Expo several years in a row now where we have host our Harry Potter trivia. We always have a great turnout. This year, for whatever reason, they stuck us in the tiny room. And people had to... sit on the floor and stand out in the hallway. And thank you to those people who did that. And I'm sorry.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. So every seat was filled. Literally every seat in the small ballroom that we were in was filled. So people started standing around the perimeter of the room. When standing room was gone, they started sitting in the aisles. It was
in the aisle and around the corners of the stage. Like the stage was in the middle and there's a little bit of space on either side. So then we filled that. And then there were still people
in the
hallway.
It was a fire marshal's nightmare.
Yes, we would have been in big trouble.
And then there was people in the hallway that were popping in to check the leaderboard and then popping back out to answer the questions because you could answer on your own mobile device. And it was awesome to have that many people interested, but it was also, I felt bad for all the people that attended and weren't able to have a seat during the festivities, but...
The technology gave us a little bit of trouble, too. It kept, the screen kept turning off.
So.
Or something. And people were like, it's gone! It's back! It's gone! It's back!
It was an HDMI issue, I believe. I think it was a shortened
little
cord
wiggle.
Or something.
Needed a wiggle.
Yeah. So we eventually got it figured out. I eventually figured out how to change the big monitor that they had to the HDMI setting with no remote control. Which I was
just randomly push buttons.
I was pressing a lot of buttons. I was very impressed with myself for being able to do that without a remote control. And it ended up, I always worry that, like you said, the technology is going to fail and we're going to be really, really embarrassed at one of these events. But we've been pretty lucky.
But we use Kahoot. And that is the nice thing about Kahoot is you can make it so that the answers and the questions show up on everyone's phone, tablet.
Mm-hmm.
I did go to an event. It was a book thing, and they were doing trivia for the book thing, and they used Kahoot, but they did not have the settings set correctly.
Yeah.
And they did not, because they planned on projecting it onto the screen, but they couldn't get that to work either. So then they were just reading the questions out loud.
Just yell out your answers if you think you know it.
And writing the answer, they had a marker board, and they drew four boxes, and they would hurry up and try and write the answers.
Mm.
in the box.
See, that's like I've had nightmares about that.
Yes.
About that being us and making us look, you know, even less professional than we already are.
We're very professional. We did have to just like shove all the prizes onto the edge of the stage because we didn't even have room for a prize table, which we usually do have a prize table,
but it worked out. It's all good. To the people at Fan Expo, thanks for having us back. Hopefully we get to do it again next year. I love that show. I just love it because there's so much to do. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to be on the crowded convention floor, there's craft rooms you can go into, and there's book lover rooms you can go into.
They really branched out this year. Like they had a room for book, literally just for book people. And there's always something going on. Like every hour, there was something going on in that room. Just like the one room that has the bingo, just going all the time.
Just come in, drop out.
Play bingo. Different kinds of bingo. Yeah, music bingo, regular bingo.
You know, you want to sit and just chill. And, you know, I was playing bingo and just catching up on my emails. Mm-hmm. It was, I love what they do with that show. And I love Rosemont, too. It's you know, a cool little town. It's got your Chicago pizza that you want. And, you know, you drive 15 minutes to get your Chicago popcorn that you want. And we took we got to talk about visiting the Harry Potter store.
Oh, yeah.
We took the blue line from Rosemont.
We avoided some major storms. Uh-huh. It was, like, very strange. There were these, like, really intense thunderstorms.
Pop up.
But they were small. Yeah. So it'd just be, like, total monsoon outside. And then it would be fine. Mm-hmm. Just fine. And then monsoon again. And, oh, it was fine. Apparently, somebody said that the storm actually knocked out the power, the air conditioning.
Yes.
In the convention center. So incredibly hot on Saturday. But that was
always very warm at those shows, and you're always
cold.
Very cold.
But it was just hot.
Everybody agreed that it was hot because even when the power came back on, I guess it takes so long to cool down a massive convention hall like
that. Full of people.
Yeah.
Breathing.
So you have to cool it down like days in advance.
Like the hot breath.
And then if you get any kind of break in that, you got to start the process all over again.
And I'm sure they had the doors all open for people to load stuff in, and that didn't help. It was a whole mess. But anyway, we did evade all the storms and go downtown to the Harry Potter store.
So they have a Harry Potter shop, not just a pop-up shop. It's like a permanent thing in downtown Chicago. I think they've got one in New York as well.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely incredible. It's very well staffed. It's very well laid out. It's got a lot of cool items that I've never seen before. And it has a butterbeer bar inside of it.
Like butterbeer bar and bakery.
Right.
You could get all kinds of cupcakes and cookies and baked goods.
Yeah, I got a Hedwig cupcake.
Mm-hmm.
But they have frozen butter beer, they have warm butter beer, they have cold butter beer, they have butter beer coffee, they have like everything. And a little, you know, little cafe for you to sit in there and enjoy your beverages and your sweet treats. And
you get a little, if you get a butter beer, you get a little plastic
cup. Little plastic mug, and they even got a little cup washing station.
So
you can wash it out before you take it home with you. They really, really kind of thought of everything. Mm-hmm. The wand selection is incredible.
Yes.
Just absolutely incredible. They have some that are customizable where you can get like your name or a message engraved on the wand.
They had, every house, of course, had their own little section. Mm-hmm. But then also, you know, there was just like the Hogwarts section or the platform 9 3/4 section or, you know, the Marauder's Map section, like, whatever your favorite part about Harry Potter is, you want some merch for that? They have a section for
you. They absolutely have.
Of course, everything. They have the candy section.
A lot of stuff. They had a lot of sale items, too. So there were things there that weren't outrageously priced. And it was incredible. And I think every time we're in Chicago, we have to go. because it is so cool, and I suggest that to any Harry Potter fan.
We didn't go when it first opened because the line was too crazy.
Yeah, apparently you had to like try, sign up for like a time to go.
It just didn't work, but it has calmed down now.
Yeah, it's been a year.
And you can just walk right in, so it's not a big deal now.
And we went on like a Saturday night, so it was really, really cool. I really suggest that to anybody who, if you're going up to Chicago for something, or even if you just want to, I say go up to Chicago because we're south of it, but maybe you're going over to Chicago or down to Chicago.
Who knows?
Or across to
Chicago. Maybe you're in Chicago and you just got to go across town.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Uh-huh. It was really easy to get to. I mean, even from Rosemont, we took the blue line in and walked like two blocks and we were there.
We were there. And it's right in the middle of where everything else is, too. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to get dinner while you were out there, there's plenty of stuff.
Yeah, right in all the
you want to do some other
Michigan
shopping.
Avenue stuff.
Everything is there. I got a Ravenclaw backpack, small backpack, and I got a Phoenix wand.
Very pretty.
Which is very pretty, and I need to find a good way to display it because it's beautiful.
And if you bought anything from that store within the couple weeks that we were there, you might have gotten a little Broomsticks and Butterbeer.
Yeah, I was going to say, we didn't talk about that. We may have left some stickers
around
the area.
The premises.
Also, if you were
got a couple new listeners from some of the employees that were
They were very excited. Also, if you were at the convention on Sunday, you might have found a little surprise in your bag.
Yeah, you and I had a little contest going for who could sneak the most Broomsticks and Butterbeer stickers unknowingly into people's bags.
Yes.
And so
it's like everybody's walking around the convention with tote bags or shopping bags. It's not like we were going into their purse or anything. But
well, that one lady you kind of dug around a little bit.
No, it was a tote bag. It just got snagged on the tote bag.
I was like real smooth, guys.
And then I had to push it a couple of times before it would fall in.
So you did beat me. I think like 14-5 or something.
Yeah,
it was a blowout. But I will put the caveat on it that I always follow behind you when we are at these conventions.
So I get all the good ones.
So I like to let you kind of go where you want to go, and I just kind of follow. And I also
carry the stuff.
And I also, I don't know if it's a guy thing, but I kind of like to see you at all times.
I'm little. You could lose me very easily.
So
if you don't keep an eye on me.
I would spot a potential victim.
Potential recipient.
15 feet away.
Of
And I was
our
like,
stickers.
Oh, the bag's wide open. I'm going to drop a sticker in there. And then you would get to it before me. So I will put that out there that I was kind of playing at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
But mine was kind of like I like the bump into and say, oh, excuse me. And then drop it. I guess kind of the pickpocket method, the New York pickpocket method. But I was giving instead of receiving. So that was my kind of go-to method. I don't know how effective it was, but that's just kind of what I came up with.
Well, I kind of feel like for a guy, you are also at a disadvantage because if a guy comes up too close to you, it's creepy. And a girl, particularly a petite girl, it's not. It was really easy for me to like step up right next to somebody and kind of look over their shoulder and look at something. Right in front of them.
Like I'm like this big blob, like coming at me. Hey, come here.
I'm just telling you that if dudes get too close, it's creepy.
We had a great time, though. It was a great weekend. Trivia was great. Congratulations to our three winners.
And I hope you found a sticker in your bag.
You went home with some good stuff. And then we had gave a lot of prizes, attendance prizes out after the fact.
And candy and
gave
bookmarks.
Out candy and bookmarks and stickers
and t-shirts.
Buttons. Yeah, it was great.
All the things.
A lot of fun. So hopefully we get to do it again next year. But last time we talked about Chapter 28, Flight of the Prince.
Oh, we still have more to do?
Yeah. We gotta do like what we normally come here to do.
Oh.
Which is talk about each chapter.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Snape kills Dumbledore. which disengages Harry's binding spell. Harry chases after Draco and Snape, fighting off other Death Eaters along the way. Harry finally gets close enough to Snape and Draco to start firing off some spells, but Snape is easily blocking them. And the big reveal of the chapter, we find out that Snape is the Half-Blood Prince. On the way back to the castle, Harry has to break the news to Hagrid about Dumbledore's death, and we get Fang's devastating howling at the end of the chapter, which kind of reminds me of something that happened in this chapter. It was also very sad and sing-songy. Chapter 29, The Phoenix Lament. Like I said, the second to last chapter, or as I call it, the penultimate chapter.
Yeah, I don't call it that.
Before we start, though, I have to say that, and I know I read this chapter yesterday. I always read it just for enjoyment, and then I read it again and stop and do notes along the way. You just read it maybe 30 minutes ago before we started recording. I thought this was probably the most well-written chapter of the series up to this point. There were so many times reading this, and I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about reading it. I got goosebumps, like literal chills, from how well the words were constructed in this chapter. I thought it was just incredible.
Yeah, there was one moment where I remember this chapter. I remembered what was going to happen. And it was, I know we're not there yet, but the interaction between Mrs. Weasley and Fleur. And I knew the lines because it's in the movie and it's very like moving. Like you say, you know, it's just memorable. But then I was, for a moment, I'm like, how are we going to get to that, though? Like, I remember the line, but how did she word it to trigger that exact line? And it felt like it wasn't
goosebumps.
Like it wasn't supernatural, but it did. It all worked. It all worked.
However you feel about J.K. Rowling's politics, she's a heck of a writer. So if you can celebrate the art from the artist, that was one of the opinion questions we had at our trivia. I always start off with a few, like, just to kind of get used to the Kahoot interface. And one of them was, who is the real they who shall not be named? And I had a picture of Voldemort and a picture of J.K. Rowling. And J.K. Rowling was the overwhelming
winner.
Yeah. So however you feel about that, we're not going to get into that because we have had so much awful politic nonsense in the world in the last 2 weeks of recording this. It's just been, we're in a bad place politically. So hopefully we can use this platform to kind of give you some disconnection from that and a little bit of enjoyment.
Little distraction. I don't know if we've ever talked about it on here. I don't just read it. I listen to the audiobook and I read along while I'm listening to the audiobook. I find that it's super immersive and I guess makes my brain focus.
You're engaging all of your senses.
I'm engaging all of my senses.
You're also feeling it in Braille while you're doing that.
Nobody's spraying any scents, though. I need some scents.
We could probably figure something out. Get like some lavender and just...
So the very beginning of this chapter, it says, come here, Harry. No, you can... You can't stay here, Harry. Come on now. No. The audiobook, it was just a little jarring because, you know, Hagrid's trying to be soothing and he's, come here, Harry. And Harry's like, no. It was just a very strange, no. No. And I...
Like, devoid of emotion or like a child, like, throwing a tantrum?
Void of emotion, but also very, like, strong.
Now, I would think you would be on board with the devoid of emotion thing because you listen to your books on 3x speed and
I do not usually.
And then it was a
no.
So there is I listen to you listen to these audiobooks. So that's I'm like 3 degrees away from this book. Like, I'm listening to you listening to a book while you're holding the book in your hand, and I'm spraying lavender all over the place, lavender and honeysuckle and just whatever sense I can come up with. But I just don't know how you can be engaged into a book when the narrator, by virtue of speeding it up so much, is so disengaging.
I don't think that they are.
Like, because I am all about, you know, when I do my read alouds and you kind of pop into the room and like giggle
because he's, yeah, doing voices. Because
I'm in the other room and I'm doing crazy voices, I'm doing sound effects, and I'm doing my, because I record all my read alouds that I do for school so that I can just play them and add sound effects and things like that in there and make it a little bit more engaging for the kids. But I think that that's important. Like, I hate when teachers read a book to a kid and they don't do that. I think that that's part of reading, is to change the voices and change the tone and change the tenor and change, you know, so that it's more engaging. And I just don't know how you can do that and not be disconnected from story.
I have to speed it up or I get distracted.
You have a short attention span.
Apparently. Yeah, especially if I'm reading
along.
Plus,
you can read twice as many books every year.
Yeah, exactly.
Or three times as many books every year.
Gotta hit that quota. If I'm reading, I need it to read at the same pace that I'm reading so that I don't get ahead of it.
I don't know. Okay.
Does that make sense?
I understand that. Like, so your brain is processing, if you were just holding the book, your brain would process the words at like a 2x audio speed.
Probably close.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, you're, yeah, I understand that.
I mean, if I'm just reading it by myself, then yeah, I might read a little slower than what I would read if I'm listening to it. I'm
trying to shake my Slurpee away from the microphone. So I'm not just doing this all the time. We should get that as a drop on the soundboard there.
And the straw.
No, my straw's not.
You gotta rub it against the side, yeah. We could play some music here.
Yeah, DJ.
I don't know. Yeah, just the two working together helps me focus and really get into the story.
Whatever works for you, babe. It all counts as reading to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, and I'm pretty sure what your answer is going to be, there's people that are of the mindset that audiobooks don't count as you having read the book. And I say that's garbage. I'm on board. However you want to.
I still experienced it the same way you did. And I know how to say the characters' names.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing, is that when you, like the character Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
Before he became, like, I read comics with him in it when I was a kid. And in my head, I always pronounce it as Thanos. Like, for years. Because I had never seen him in a cartoon. I had never seen him in a movie. It was always Thanos to me. So then when Thanos came into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I felt like an idiot. Because for 20 years or whatever, I'd been, you know, mispronouncing it. So that's, I think, an advantage to the audiobooks, is that you get the pronunciation, and I'm sure they clear it with the author before they record the audiobook.
You would be surprised. No, most of the time.
Sometimes they go rogue.
So in Throne of Glass, there is a character that, kind of like Hermione, where nobody knew how to say the name, and there's all kinds of different, some people called him Cole, some people called him Kale, some people called him all kinds of names, and the audiobook person says K-all. Almost
like
robotic
that.
And it's like
almost sounds like AI.
Yeah, it's like she makes it two very distinct syllables, K-all. It's just Kale, like kale from the ocean. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, yeah, just kale,
like, but the gross vegetable.
Kale. 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 Kale.
Why would,
I don't know.
I'm sure.
And they probably did tell her because she knows how to pronounce everything else in the book, but maybe she just couldn't.
I'd make her go back and re-record it. Whole thing. You know, I'm wondering if it's just going to eventually be AI audiobooks. Because there's commercials that I hear now, like on podcasts specifically, that are definitely not read by a person. It's just like an AI voice reading it. And they try to make it sound like a human, but they're not quite, the technology's not quite there yet here mm-hmm. in 2025. And there was one that it was like a T-Mobile commercial. And we live in a suburb of St. Louis called Florissant.
Mm-hmm. And people who live here say it wrong, but...
Well, this commercial, it always irks me because they always say, visit your local T-Mobile store in Florissant. Florissant.
A lot of people just say fluorescent.
Yeah.
I live in Florissant.
Well, like, that's better than Florissant.
Yeah, Florissant.
And I go, come on, guys. Like, this is obviously... You obviously just typed this into AI. You didn't bother to check. And I know you probably do tens of thousands of these for every little tiny town. But it frustrates me that I did a whole workshop this year at school for AI. And the things that you can do with it are amazing. But there's, in my opinion, there's never going to be, it's never going to be a replacement for the human factor. When it comes to creating art, when it comes to interpreting art, that you're just never going to be able to, when it comes to performative art, you know, you're never going to be able to just replace that with a computer. Maybe in 100 years, but this planet's probably not even going to be here in 100 years.
Not at the rate we're going.
And at the rate and the technology that advances with weapons and things like that, and just the rising political furor that's going on in the world. But I'm worried that it's so easy to rely on AI to do everything, that and it's more cost effective to have a computer, you know, read the audiobook rather than paying somebody thousands of dollars to perform the audiobook. Or some of them, they pay a cast of people to perform the audiobook and write original background music and things like that for it. I'm worried that artificial intelligence is going to take the human aspect out of art. And when we lose art from our culture, we're losing part of our humanity. You know, art is so important. You know, people talk about that, you know, art and music class at school is just, you know, playtime for the kids and just break time for the classroom teachers. But it's not, because if you have a society that doesn't have art, like I said, I think you're missing part of your humanity. And maybe I'm like overreaching here, but I think it's super important. You're laughing at me.
No, I'm not laughing at you.
So I'm gonna shake my Slurpee in the microphone.
I'm not laughing at you. It just made me think there was a we had somebody come into the library.
I thought you were like, God, this guy, I think you're taking it a little too far, bud.
And she was just complaining and being nitpicky and could not make this woman happy. Finally, like, but later when she was gone, I said, man, she needs some hobbies. She needs some hobbies.
Hobbies are great.
She needs some creative outlet to take up her time.
And, you know, and hobbies are great for not just like taking up your time, but they're great for like staving off depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have, you know, something to do, you know, especially when you get older. You know, I've found that I'm never bored. You know, I'm not one of those people that's ever bored. And it's not because I'm like so incredibly busy. You know, I'm just such an important person.
Why did you sound like your dad?
because
bud, I'm so incredibly busy.
I don't, bud. I probably work till the day I die. That's what he's told me on many occasions. Because my mom, aka Mrs. Weasley, recently, I use retired in air quotes because she still pops into the office every once in a while. But my dad's like, I like my job. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have it. So I realize that I sound
like
my dad. I was singing one day at my parents' house, and my nieces and nephews were over there. And one of them goes, I stopped singing, and she goes, "You sound like Grandpa." I said, "Yeah, I could kind of see that. Want to talk about Harry Potter?
We probably should. Okay. You said that's what we were here for.
Yeah. So Harry and Hagrid are staring at Dumbledore's body. And like you said, Hagrid tries to pull Harry away, but Harry won't move. Until it's actually Jenny that takes Harry's hand. Would Harry have gone with anyone else?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Like, I don't, like Ron,
I
Hermione,
mean, he,
like,
he
I don't think
says
so.
That he didn't really pay attention. He didn't really know who it was until later. So I feel like she's trying to paint this picture that it's like almost a natural magical connection between the two of them. Not literally magical, but you know what I mean?
Right,
love,
right. Yeah,
love
yeah.
magical. So that.
Like the connection you and I have.
He just has to follow her. Yeah, you always follow me.
You scoop right. Yeah, I have to.
You have to follow me.
And carry all the stuff because I am your protector.
Yes.
I shall protect you. Even in when you're surrounded by geeks and need no protection. You could take 80% of the people in that convention hall if you had to. But yeah, I that's kind of what I put in my notes is like, would he have gone with anybody else? Because like you said, he was so adamant about not going, and then
Jenny says I have to go.
That connection between them. So Harry and Jenny are headed to the hospital wing where the good guys are all holed up.
But I'm not hurt.
We find out that Neville and Flitwick are hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately okay, and that luckily there were no casualties other than Dumbledore. And it turns out that Harry's friends did utilize a bit of Harry's liquid luck potion before the battle, which probably accounted for their good fortune. And although there's no other deaths, Bill Weasley is not in good shape, is he? What happened to Bill?
I had a little bit of trouble, not trouble picturing Bill, because we see that in the movie.
Okay.
But they kept talking about him getting attacked by Greyback.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, like, bit, and then they say he's got, you know, his face is all tore up.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they kept saying he didn't change, so I just had a little...
Greyback wasn't in werewolf form when
so
he attacked.
It just was hard for me to imagine. Like, if he wasn't a werewolf and he was a person, even if he had, like, the canines, how would he open his jaw big enough to bite Bill's face?
Well, he doesn't groom his nails.
Yeah, but so that's what I was thinking, that it was more like
so
claws.
Even when he's in human form... He's got these, like, Ripley's, believe it or not.
But they said bit.
Long nails.
And that's what threw me out of it.
Yeah.
I was ready to accept that he got clawed up.
Maybe it's like in Teen Wolf, where he doesn't
go full...
He
just changes his head a little bit.
Yeah. He doesn't go full wolf, but he does kind of get, like, the long fangs, and he goes, "Give me a keg of beer."
But still, you couldn't bite somebody's whole face.
You'd have to. There was a lot of little bites. A lot of little bites. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of little bites. He was nibbling.
I was
like when the dogs nibble lovingly on each other.
I was confused.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if that is in the movie. The actual attack.
No.
So you don't really get to see.
You really missed the whole battle at Hogwarts.
I bet we'll get to see it in the TV show. I bet it'll
you just
it'll
are
be
with Harry
production.
And then come back and there's chaos. You don't really get what's going on.
Gotcha.
Kind of like we didn't get it here, but we just got the explanation.
Mm-hmm. So there's multiple layers to the Bill Weasley issue here. The wounds won't heal. The wounds on his face won't heal, maybe ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard in the magical world to find wounds that you can't heal. Like when Draco got his, you know, whole body ripped open by the Sectum Sempra, it was pretty simple fix. But when you're dealing with some, I guess the werewolf thing is kind of in the magical boundaries, but slightly outside of that, is in its own little tier. I guess it's kind of hard to fix one mystical thing with another mystical thing.
Well, so they said they were like cursed wounds. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of felt like something that was like Dumbledore's hand. It was a curse. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do anything right for it. So I think it just kind of falls into that category. And I get what you're saying. Like, it's a different sort of magic because mm-hmm. it's werewolf.
Yeah.
But
probably the same thing with, like, vampires and
different types of magic. Yeah. You can't just heal them. But also, I think it's the curse
element.
It's
more supernatural than magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also the fact that we don't know if this means, is Bill a werewolf now? Like, we don't know.
They lean towards no because he had not fully transformed, but they do think that there will
be... He could have some wolfy tendencies.
Some tendencies.
He might howl
he
every
might
once.
Scratch a little weird now.
Might
he's got an itch.
Track some fleas and...
be a little extra hairy.
You know, howl every once in a while. But to add to the sadness of the situation, several members of the crew are finding out for the first time that Dumbledore's dead. Like, Ron's finding out for the first time, Hermione, Tonks, yeah. Madame Pomfrey, even Lupin.
That one was rough when Madame Pomfrey couldn't heal Bill's wounds. Ron immediately says, well, go get Dumbledore. He can do it.
Mm.
And Harry's just like, Dumbledore's dead.
Down just you saying that. Yeah.
That was a rough one. He was so hopeful and Dumbledore mm-hmm. could fix it.
Dumbledore is the constant. We can always count on Dumbledore.
And then again, Harry has to kind of break the news to everybody. And
Dumbledore's always kind of been the person who... the glue that holds Hogwarts together. And everybody said that Hogwarts is the safest place that you can be, even if the Dark Lord is back, because we got Dumbledore here. And now Dumbledore's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And everybody's trying to process it in the moment, on top of having your friends in the infirmary and having Bill Weasley potentially scarred for life. It's a very heavy chapter. And I thought it was so compelling and so well written. But, I mean, the real somber part, which I kind of alluded to earlier, the part that, again, giving me goosebumps just recalling reading it, harkens back to the name of our chapter as Fox, the Phoenix, starts singing like a heartfelt, brutally sorrowful song that echoes throughout the castle grounds. Was this in the film? How would you describe what we hear in this chapter?
If it's in the film, it's just, I don't remember completely, but I don't feel like it is, but there might be something playing in the background, and like, it's kind of like the, if you know, you know uh-huh. thing.
But not really acknowledged.
But not really acknowledged. There was, I think, in a scene, well, it all kind of plays out different, because they're up in the tower, astronomy tower, I think, again, at the very, very end, and you see Fox fly off, mm-hmm. and I think he lets out a cry or whatever mm-hmm. when he's flying off. But I don't think this is really addressed. But also, how can you... It'd be hard to put it into actual song. Mm-hmm. Like, that is as powerful as it claims. Almost like it wouldn't live up to
yeah.
the description.
Yeah.
Because it's different for everybody, kind of deal. Like, what I would think would be the most heart-wrenching, sorrow-filled mm-hmm. song probably wouldn't match for everybody.
Yeah.
So maybe they just felt like, we'll just leave it out rather than fall short.
Well, as Elton John said, a sad song says so much.
Mm-hmm. This one doesn't say anything, though, because there's no words.
It's just, it just was heart-wrenching, and we couldn't even hear it. But the way it was written and the way people, the way the characters reacted to it, where they just
just stop.
Got quiet and just listened to it. It was so incredibly heart-wrenching just reading that. Harry's also the one that has to break the news, to make things even worse, break the news that Snape, you know, one of Dumbledore's most trusted members of the Order of the Phoenix, is the one who struck the killing blow against Dumbledore. And there seemed to be like a mixed reaction to the news from what I read and the way I interpreted it. Some people couldn't believe it, and others immediately started thinking along the lines of, well, kind of makes sense.
I think it was mostly Lupin, but Lupin went to school with Snape, and they always kind of hated each other, you know, going in throughout the years, and there was always problems, and I feel like he always kind of held. He's like, you can be here, it's fine. Dumbledore says you get to be here, but I don't have to like you. I don't have to. We just have to work together. I don't have to like you.
So, is that the way that you interpreted it? Like that there was kind of a mixed reaction to levels of surprise there? I mean, Harry, this just totally, he just totally like, feels vindicated
told
for everything
you.
He's been saying for years.
Told you.
Yeah,
I think a couple of people, McGonagall was like, no, he always trusted him. No, he said there was a good reason. He never told me what it was, but it was ironclad and it was a good reason. And then Harry shares the reason, you know, that, oh, well, he told me and it was because he's the one who told Voldemort about my parents and the prophecy and blah blah blah, or told him about the prophecy and that's what got my parents killed. And then, you know, Lupin immediately fires him with, he didn't care about James, he hated James, he wouldn't care if he got killed. And I think that kind of flipped Tonks. I think Tonks was, no, Dumbledore said so, it's fine, but I wish I knew the reason he believed this. And then as soon as she heard the reason, she too was like, no, that's not a good reason.
Yeah.
And so she flipped after that. Kind of like cascaded.
McGonagall immediately starts blaming herself, because McGonagall is the one who sent Flitwick to fetch Snape when the Death Eaters had entered the castle. And apparently, as it turned out, Snape hexed Flitwick and then joined his Death Eater buddies upstairs. So McGonagall's putting this on herself. There's a lot of, and that's kind of been like an overarching thing in the story. Everybody in this whole saga, there's always people that are kind of blaming themselves for, and that they could have done more.
That's a common thing that everyone does.
Survivor's guilt.
So it makes sense. I don't think that's unique to this story. People do that all the time. It's like, oh my God, if I hadn't done that, then this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. And I think, like, that's why it makes the, you know, that's why it's good writing. It makes the story more relatable, because you could totally see how, I mean, I do that all the time. Like, even when I'm in a car accident or something, I'm wondering, well, if I wouldn't have had to go to the store at that time, I wouldn't have been in that situation. And, you know, I remember you telling me, well, you can't think that way.
No.
Because it's just, that's just too many variables. Like, if you really think about it, you could, like, go back, like, 10 weeks to something that you did that caused this chain of events to you needing to go to the grocery store at that time. So you're really just kind of, you know, digging the hole deeper, and then it's going to be eventually something emotionally that you're not going to be able to get out of.
But it did point out that, and I think this was kind of the reason that we went down this little thread, was Snape didn't seem to know. He was in his office. Yeah. He was minding his own business. He had no idea that what had happened, what had broken, you know, the chaos that had broken loose upstairs.
About the Dark Mark, not about nothing. You know, the Death Eaters getting in through the Vanishing Cabinet.
He clearly wasn't in on this mission, if you want to call it that. Yeah.
So we already knew that the Death Eaters get into Hogwarts through the Vanishing Cabinet and the Room of Requirement. And Ron, Jenny, and Neville were all prepared for Malfoy to come out of the room, because they had the Marauder's map. When Malfoy disappears from the Marauder's map, they assume
he's
in the
room of requirement.
So they're waiting outside of the room for about an hour to take him down, but Draco had some tricks up his sleeve, didn't he?
Courtesy of Fred and George, apparently.
Yeah.
He had a
Peruvian something.
Darkness powder, midnight powder, I don't know, but it's the powder he throws out. And
I wonder if it was from Darkest Peru, like Darkest where Paddington's Peru. From. Yeah.
And it makes everything dark. Nothing works. You can't. They tried all of their tricks and spells to try and brighten and see where they were going. They saw nothing. Nothing worked.
And Draco had a hand of glory?
Yes. So this is in another book I read, and I was like, what? Mm-hmm. There's another book I read. The character had a hand of glory. She even named it. Apparently it had in this. I don't know if this is all. I didn't even know it was a thing. I thought it was made up for that book.
I've got a hand of glory.
But you had to cut off a thieve's hand and put the eyeball in the palm. And then you drip it in wax. And then
you
light
the
fingers.
It's a common thing.
As candles. And then in the other book, showed you magic. So if there was a curse or a jinx on something, it would, illuminate it.
Yeah, there's even a Wikipedia article on
Hands of Glory.
A hand of glory is the dried and pickled hand.
Ew.
Yeah, of a hanged man, often specified as being the left Latin sinister hand. Or if the person was hanged for murder, the hand that, quote, did the deed. Old European beliefs attribute great powers to a hand of glory. The process for preparing the hand and the candle are described in 18th century documents, with certain steps disputed due to difficulty in properly translating phrases from that era. The story has inspired short stories and poems since the 19th century.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And there's a really weird picture here of a hand with a birthday candle sticking out of it.
That's not what the one from the other book looked like. And it had an eyeball in the palm. And she had to poke it and yell at it to wake up. It had a name. It was almost like a character in the book.
Huh. The candle can only be put out only with milk.
Why were people so weird?
In another version, the hand of the dead man is used as a wick, and the candle would give light only to the holder. And that's kind of what the powers that Draco's hand of glory had, is that he was the only one who was able to see with the Peruvian darkness powder created by Fred and George. And I think Ron says, well, I'm going to have to get on Fred and George and who they're selling their items to, because they're using them for evil, Jessica.
Evil.
Knowing everything that she knows now, Hermione was blaming herself. Well, you didn't mean to press that.
I did not, but it kind of fits.
It kind of fits there. Kind of insensitive by you, though, because somebody's dead here. But you're an emotionless robot who listens to books on 3x speed.
Sorry.
But
I was trying to... Oh, here. This is the one. This is what it's supposed to look like from the other book.
Oh, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, it has the
that's
eyeball.
That's a lot more creepy than the birthday candle one.
In the palm, and each finger is a candle.
Like the birthday candle one on the Wikipedia thing. I was like, oh, that'd be a kind of a cool birthday cake.
No.
You know, especially if you were born around Halloween
Some
time.
Dead guy's hand. Okay, anyway, so Hermione is blaming herself.
Yeah, some survivor's guilt as well.
But she, prides herself on being clever and figuring things out. And this is something that she was just not on top of. She was actually kind of against, She was sick of hearing Harry talk about Draco and Snape and this conspiracy theory. And she was just not on board. And she was very, very, very wrong.
So Hermione and Luna.
Luna.
Were hanging out outside Snape's office, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the point of them being there?
Well, because in the conspiracy theory of Harry's, Snape was supposed to be helping Draco with whatever his task was.
So they were
was.
Just keeping an eye on
Snape. Because they figured if something went down, Snape would be involved.
Mm-hmm. So Hermione's kind of blaming herself for just letting Snape enter the fray without stopping him, even though she was sure at the time that he was on the side of good.
And he also tricked her to not enter the fray herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said that Flitwick passed out. I need you guys to take care of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will go deal with the rest.
But Hermione and Luna wouldn't have been able to do anything anyway, right? Like, even if they knew that Snape was a bad guy, they wouldn't have been able to...
Most likely not.
...stop him.
Like, even if she, like, hardcore believed and was ready to take aim at Snape...
Snape's just too powerful.
He's too powerful. He could block her jinx and...
No doubt. Like, Harry couldn't even touch Snape, you know, in the last chapter. So, I just don't... I understand the survivor's guilt, but like you've told me, you can't think that way.
Yeah. I think hers was more, I mean, that's where she focused it, but it was the whole situation.
Yeah.
The fact that she was so very wrong, that she had been discouraging Harry from fighting. Maybe if she had believed him and helped, then they could have found more clues and they could have proven this and they could have prevented the whole thing.
Yeah. If you keep going back and back and back. Yeah. So I want to talk about a part that you alluded to a few minutes ago. And at first, I did not like this next part at all. But this is why, outside of strongly worded emails, I'm not a writer. Because I quickly found out that the point about this scene quickly became apparent. And the one I'm talking about is when Mr. and Mrs. Weasley arrive along with Bill's fiancée, Fleur. And Molly is so grief-stricken and just can't contain her agony over what's happened to Bill. And she says something like, oh, he was always very handsome and he was going to be married. How did Fleur respond to that?
Oh, she got mad. Mm-hmm. She goes, what do you mean, going to be married? You think he's not going to want to marry me now? Because they had been talking that there might be some effects. And I did appreciate this, that it didn't just go right to the other part.
Mm-hmm.
We went here first.
Yeah.
That he wouldn't want to marry me. Why would he not want to marry me? Why would it change because of this wolf bite? That's not going to stop him from loving me.
Yeah. And he's like, you think I'm so shallow that I wouldn't want to marry him because he's not going to be handsome anymore?
Molly clarifies, no, I thought you just wouldn't want to marry him. And then, she's like, that's ridiculous.
So the reason I didn't like this part at first was because it just seemed to deepen the discontent between Molly and Fleur that we've been exposed to in previous chapters.
Mm-hmm.
But that feeling quickly went away, and this interaction ended up doing the opposite of that. Molly sees Fleur in a totally different light.
Does she truly loves him?
Yes, for him. Not for how he looks, not for, you know, shallow reasons, like the reasons you married me. And almost immediately accepts Fleur as part of the family, like in that moment. It kind of flips a switch for both of them.
Yeah.
And we've talked about on previous episodes about like funerals that I've gone to and about how horrible happenings can bring a family closer together. And I think this is a great example of that, because they immediately realize that the other person is not who I was portraying them negatively in my mind.
Well, and I think so. Fleur kind of got a bad rap because she was just this beautiful thing, and you know, everybody suspected her, like her mom, grandma, whatever, was part siren, and that she has this magical allure to her, and people don't really like her, they just are magically drawn to her, magically infatuated with her, this and that. So I don't know if Molly was still kind of like, no, this is gonna, like, I get why Bill's obsessed with you, why are you interested in him? And she just didn't make sense.
Yeah.
People couldn't make it add up.
Because Bill's like not rich.
No, not rich.
You know, he's obviously he was good looking, but not like a famous athlete or, you know, a powerful politician or anything like that.
I feel like he had his life together. That's always a perk.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she says, I liked it when she called him her husband. Even though they're not married yet.
Yeah.
She was like, I think all this is proves that my husband is brave.
Yeah.
And she's so in Fleur's mind, we're already married. It's a done deal.
Yeah.
We just
got to sign the paperwork.
We just got to sign the paperwork. Yeah. But we're married.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was part of what snapped everything, took the wall down for Molly. I was like, oh, I couldn't figure out why you were with my son. Now I know you really mean it.
So then something strange happens. This love fest between Fleur and Molly kind of triggers a response from Tonks, who apparently has been so in love with Lupin for a long time.
Were you surprised by that?
I was.
You were on the Sirius? Were you sold on Sirius?
The satellite radio?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's pretty good, I
Harry
guess.
Thought that Tonks was more was in love with Sirius and mourning Sirius.
And I think we commented that on a recent episode where I said, that's kind of weird. Isn't he kind of old? And we couldn't remember. I remember we talking about we couldn't really nail down
an age
gap between
the
two of them.
She's kind of in between.
But yeah, it did catch me off guard. And honestly, I didn't even know if Lupin was interested in women.
Yeah.
I kind of was picking up some vibes to the contrary.
I think he just doesn't think he should be with anybody because he's dangerous, which was his argument with Tonks, is like, because he's a werewolf, he's too dangerous to be around. And
but apparently Tonks has been feeling this way for a long time and finally feels strong enough to let all these feelings out in front of everyone. Is this the reason why we've had such a odd, downtrodden Tonks in recent chapters? This has been the whole thing
behind
with
it? Tonks is the late night conversations with Molly at the kitchen table, Patronus changing to a canine type animal, Sirius's dog form, Lupin's werewolf form.
Interesting. So everybody's just letting their truths be known.
Yeah. There's another incident where she like runs into Harry in the corridor and she's very distracted and she's like, I need to talk to Dumbledore about something. And I forget the connection, but it really had something to do with Lupin.
Yeah, I remember that was just a few chapters ago.
And
So McGonagall, by virtue of Dumbledore's death, is now headmistress at Hogwarts. And she calls all the house heads together to see how they go forward, with Slughorn now representing Slytherin instead of Snape. But before that, McGonagall asked Harry what he and Dumbledore were up to while they were gone. And I know Harry promised Dumbledore that he would only talk about it to Ron and Hermione.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of weird to me that he couldn't even tell McGonagall.
Yeah, I thought that was weird too. I mean, I get his logic that Dumbledore would not tell anybody. But he didn't know. Dumbledore told him not to tell anybody, but he doesn't know who Dumbledore told.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Dumbledore doesn't have anybody working with him. I mean, obviously he was had Snape helping him because he was helping him deal with the curse on the hand and everything. So I don't know. I thought it was a little strange to presume that McGonagall didn't know, or I guess she kind of showed that she didn't know by asking Harry.
Couldn't McGonagall have gotten the information if she really wanted to?
How so?
Couldn't she have just like pulled it out of his head or something?
McGonagall would not do that. She would not resort to those kinds of things.
Okay.
Daniel.
I just thought that Harry had such a good relationship with McGonagall.
He does. So it did feel weird, but it also felt
I would feel like, hey, like, it's like when a new president comes and they get like the black book of all the presidential secrets.
I have to know what's going on in order to continue.
Yeah, yeah.
In order to take over.
If I was McGonagall, I'd just go ask Ron and Hermione.
She doesn't know that they know.
Oh, I'm...
Well, I mean, he's going to assume that they know.
I would just say, hey, Hermione,
I wanted to talk to Harry about his little excursion with Dumbledore, but, you know, he's so upset.
No,
so.
I would pretend that I knew already.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I wanted to get the details of what happened, but he's already, he's so upset. He's already told everybody.
Yeah, he told me to come talk to you.
Yeah, and so I thought I'd just get it from you.
I bet Ron would fall for that. Mm-hmm. So the heads of houses meet, and the gist of the conversation is whether to shut down Hogwarts or not. And they finally decided that they will send all the students home, but not before honoring Dumbledore with a funeral.
I couldn't remember where we were at in the school year. But, you know, we take a while to make our way through the book. And I'm like, is it the end of the year anyway? Because, you know, most of the books go from, like, the first day of school to the last day of school. So I feel like, aren't we at the end of the school year anyway? But I don't really remember exactly where we're at in the school year.
So I guess we're going to have, in our last chapter, we're going to have the Dumbledore funeral. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So Harry goes back to the Gryffindor common room, catches Ron up on his quest with Dumbledore, and Harry tells Ron that the Horcrux was not in the cave and had been replaced by a fake with a cryptic note inside that read R-A-B, which I'm sure we'll get to down the line. And that was pretty much it for chapter 29. Is there anything you would like to add before I get into this week's email?
I just looked it up, and it says Dumbledore died on June 30th, 1979 at the Battle of the Astronomy Tower. That seems awfully late in the school year.
1979?
I mean, 1997. Babe, you know I'm dyslexic. Stop it. June 30th, 1997.
That's awfully late into the summer to be going to school.
Yeah.
But I guess Kelly up in New York, they go late because they don't start till Labor Day.
But they don't start super late. Don't they go back on, September 1st?
They go back day after Labor Day. Yeah. Which is like...
Hogwarts.
I don't know. Well, so Harry's birthday is the end of July. I thought they always went back right after Harry's birthday. No, it's September 1st, isn't it?
Yeah, September 1st.
Yeah, September 1st. Yeah, because I remember at the Harry Potter store, there was things that said back to Hogwarts September 1st on it. So, yeah, I guess going late into June would kind of make sense.
I don't know. It just feels late. I'm like, oh, they're like, should we shut the school down? I'm like, people are going home anyway, right? At what point are they going home?
Like, it's almost July, bro.
Is it like, after midnight?
We need
it's
to go
July.
Home. Anything else?
No.
All right. This email from this week comes to us, broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. You can always send us your emails with questions or thoughts or discussion topics or shout outs or whatever you want to do, and we'll give you a shout out on the air. This one comes to us from Cindy in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Hi, Cindy.
Knowing where all the characters end up romantically, what are some relationships that you wouldn't have minded seeing? Personally, I've always been on the Draco Hermione bandwagon. I am not on that bandwagon.
I am not either. I get the whole enemies to lovers trope, but you just got to find it somewhere else.
So there's the enemies to lovers. There's one horse,
one bed.
What are the other tropes you're always talking about?
There's friends to lovers too. Some that are not appropriate to discuss on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those that.
I'm sure you'll talk about all those tropes on the Book Cave podcast.
Yes, we do talk about those extensively.
Hosted
on
by
Book Cave.
You and Jennifer and Anastasia and Catherine, which is not safe for all audiences.
No, Jennifer reads some stuff.
Yeah, some nasty stuff. But that is available on all podcast platforms. We'll kind of call it our sister podcast, but
yeah,
maybe
we
our,
do that.
Maybe our stepsister.
Cousin.
So we can distance ourselves a little
like
bit
cousin.
From the naughtiness that you guys get into and the shenanigans that
definitely
occur
and
tomfoolery over there on the Book Cave podcast, available on all podcast platforms.
Since we're speaking about that anyway, I recently read a book that, rumor has it, was started off as Draco Hermione fan fiction.
Interesting.
Was popular, got picked up to be by a publisher, but of course she had to change it quite a bit to make it not Draco Hermione anymore. Yeah. Kind of hated it.
Mm.
Kind of hated it. I like the enemies to lovers trope.
What book
but
is it?
This, I'm not going to say.
Mm. You don't want to give it the time. I'm not going to give this book the time of day.
But if you're curious,
no
I'm sure you could
here.
Go to the Book Cave blog and figure it out real easy. But I'm not going to throw the shade.
Do you have a website for the Book Cave blog offhand?
I think it's just Book Cave blog at WordPress.
Bookcaveblog.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
First thing that pops up here.
The story wasn't bad. The characters weren't bad. It was just... That was the one I told you about, that the places had... The, like, weird names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bunghole. It was very raunchy. Unnecessarily so. Distractingly so. Yeah, no. Pass. It was a pass for me.
I go to the Book Cave blog website right here, and I see a Book Cave book review for Ghost Boy.
Nah, that was the one you listened to in the car.
Miraculous escape of a misdiagnosed boy trapped inside his own body.
That's not a regular flair. That's something I had to read for book club at the library. Mm-hmm. But typically we're a fantasy.
Yeah, so check out the Book Cave blog. You could just probably Google Book Cave blog and it's the first thing that pops up. But Book Cave podcasts on all podcast platforms. So what are some... What are some ships? You guys call them ships, right?
Ships,
when you
yes,
ship,
sir.
Two you folks in a relationship.
Ships and characters.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's a little early for this, isn't it? Aren't we going to kind of get spoilery? In the movies...
I think we kind of know
for
where,
you.
Yeah.
For the movies, at the very end, they kind of alluded to, I think, Luna and Neville.
Yeah.
And...
I've always been on the Luna-Harry... bandwagon. I always thought there was, especially
that'd be kind of cute. Actually, I've never thought of this.
Especially movie Luna, who uh-huh. I think is kind of like the diet version of book Luna. I think book Luna is very much loony Luna, and I think the movie version of Luna is a little bit more toned down mm-hmm. version of the loony, and. I don't know. There was a connection with like the Thestrals, and I think Harry, especially in the movies, is one that kind of
gets her.
Yeah, and like kind of forces Luna to kind of come out of her shell a little bit. So
I'm picturing teen movies where she like takes her glasses off and then she's high.
She's all that.
He's just like, this is my girlfriend. Everybody's like, ew, you like Luna? And he's like, no, literally, look, take your glasses off. Look, she's hot. It's magic.
It's literally magic. It's like Clark Kent taking off his glasses. And also, when did Superman get here?
Oh my gosh, Superman. Yeah, no, I kind of like that. You'd have to tweak some things to get it there. But mm-hmm. yeah, I kind of like that because they just... seemed to have similar storylines.
So especially in the movies, I think that there's much more of a connection between Harry and Luna than there is between Harry and Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the books, I kind of am getting,
hints.
I'm kind of getting the Harry and Jenny relationship. It still seems very quick. that he went from
out of nowhere.
Oh, my best bud's sister. To I've got this like burning pit in my stomach with the love that I have for her. It's still a little quick, but in the movies, it's absurd how quick they go from, you know, just my buddy's sister to I can't live without you. It's absurd. So I think definitely in the movies, the Harry Luna connection is much more present than the Harry Jenny connection.
There's a little bit of information later that does help, but yeah, no, it's very quick. It kind of seems like it comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think one time before I read all the books, I asked somebody and I was like, this is weird. So he ends up with Hermione and they're like, no, he ends up with Jenny. And I'm like, who is that? Like, I was so confused.
Wait, what?
Who? Who? But I think on Pottermore, I like go back to the Neville Luna thing. Mm. Which I kind of get to. They're both kind of the goofy outcasts, mm-hmm. outlier characters. I could see that, but I think
both kind of became, I don't want to say come out of their shell too many times, but both as a result of being in Dumbledore's army.
Mm-hmm. They stepped up.
Yeah. Yeah, they both had kind of like similar story arcs, yeah.
And but I think in Pottermore she changes that. That's not, like, she didn't seem to agree mm-hmm. with the way the movie implied that at the end. And so on, like, Pottermore, where you can go and read background stories and other stories about the characters, she changes it. And Neville, like, works at the school and he's a professor and he is married to somebody else, not Luna. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of sad. I was like, well, why some random person we don't know? Like, pair the characters up. But it also never got really Tonks and Lupin either.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a thing and I'm like okay with it, but I just don't get it.
Who would you rather see Tonks with? One of the Weasley boys?
I would have had a different vibe from her.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of the Weasley boys. Somebody else. I don't know. There's nobody really in her age group mm-hmm. in the story.
That's why I thought like one of the older Weasley boys.
Yeah. Maybe she goes and gets Percy and makes him act right.
Makes him not be a jerk.
Yeah. Whips him into shape.
Yeah.
That would be a total catastrophe. That would not be a good relationship. Nothing else really. It was just a joke. People don't take me seriously on that. Nothing really pops into my head.
Who, like, I always kind of thought, like, before I even read the movies or watched the books, I always just kind of assumed that Read the movies and watched the books. Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it in there. Before I...
Subtitles.
Before
on the
I
book,
only
movies.
Knew who the characters were and not anything else, I always kind of assumed that they were setting it up for Harry and Hermione.
Mm-hmm. And I've read things that J.K. Rowling kind of regrets that, and that she
thinks...
I don't
know, I'm kind of glad they didn't, because it seemed like too
She
obvious.
Thinks that Hermione and Ron are too different, uh-huh. and that they would not... Like she'd get over his shenanigans quick, and...
I don't know. That kind of seems like you
and
me.
On one hand, they work. They balance each other out. But at the other
that
hand...
It seems like you and me. Very much so. I do a lot of shenanigans.
You do a lot of bits.
Yeah. And you've kind of grown to accept those. I'm not going to say love those, but you've grown to make them part of your life.
It's just part of who you are, babe.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've poisoned you a little bit with my tomfoolery, changed you a little bit, but I don't know. I'm kind of glad they didn't do the Harry Hermione thing.
Yeah.
It seemed a little too obvious.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. Like there are a lot of characters, but we spend so much time with these characters.
Would you like to see a Harry Cho?
No.
You know, kind of see how that worked out.
No, she was too silly for him, you know.
Give me somebody else for Harry, though.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like we spend so much time with these characters and we know them so well, and none of them really feel compatible.
Harry and Fleur?
Ew, no.
Why ew?
I don't know. Just ew, no.
He's only a couple years older than him. He saved her sister.
Yes, but she's so snooty.
I don't know. She seemed like she kind of didn't seem very snooty in this chapter.
I know, but she came off
very
snooty
before.
She
did say that I'm good looking enough for the both of us. I don't care if he's scarred. He's not good looking. I'm good looking enough for the both of us. And I kind of went, all right.
Calm down.
I was just on your side, lady. Just complimenting you here. Let's not mess that up. So Harry gets never finds love.
No, I'm universe. Okay with Jenny. I wish it had.
It's not the question.
Come out better.
What are some relationships that you wouldn't have minded seeing? Answer the question. You can't handle the truth.
I can't. I don't know. I don't have anybody. I just don't feel
Dumbledore
like
Dumbledore and McGonagall.
No. But I wish McGonagall had somebody.
Yeah.
There's like a backstory on Pottermore for her. It's very sad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
She like loved a muggle and it didn't work out.
That's not good.
No. So I wish she had somebody. But I think she like, ooh, I almost used the wrong word. She has such a like variety of characters and personalities. That they just, like, she made them very different.
Talking about J.K. Rowling?
Yeah, that they don't fit together. They fit together.
You're talking about, like,
McGonagall
had multiple personality disorder or something.
No.
I go, that might contribute to her struggling to find love.
But I just don't feel like they fit together.
Okay.
Because they're very.
Well,
different.
I will answer the question.
Go
I'll
for
say,
it.
I'll
Sorry,
say
Cindy.
Harry and
I'm
Luna,
the worst.
Since Jess is recusing herself from from
I
the
said
conversation.
That I would get on board with that one.
You would like to invoke your Fifth Amendment privileges and not have to answer the question.
I think you have to pair them off with other randos that weren't in the books because okay. they just don't fit together.
All right. Who's Dudley end up with?
No one.
No one.
Sad and alone. No, he does apologize, so we have to like not hate him, but still do.
Yeah. It's tough to be just like a jerk for like 15 years and mm-hmm. then you're like, you know what, man, you're not so bad.
Yeah, but you know, it really wasn't his fault. First of all, he's a kid. Some kids are just jerks. He's got to grow up. He's got to learn better.
His parents are horrible.
But also his
people.
Parents were horrible and yeah. spoiled him rotten. Yeah. And he followed in their footsteps. Like they treated Harry like crap. So he's going to treat Harry
Absolutely.
Like crap. So it's not totally his fault.
He had nobody to teach him humility. He had nobody to teach him compassion. He had nobody to teach him empathy. You know, what's he supposed to do? He's a kid.
But also, I want authors to just let us not like some characters.
I don't like Draco. Never will. Never will. Don't care if he redeems himself at the end. Don't care.
No.
Like, never going to like him. He's just and I'm good with that. I'm good with not everybody having a, you know, Bob Marley redemption song.
Some authors, though, man, they just want to shove forgiveness down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no. I just leave me alone. I want to hate this character.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Cindy, thanks for the email. You can always send us your emails, broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. Like I said, we love those. Give you a shout out. I'm kind of backed up on emails, but that makes it so we'll definitely have one every episode. Sometimes we'll have dos or deux.
Deux.
Or trois.
What?
Oh, and now I'm getting a little out of control here.
It's ridiculous. It's getting ridiculous.
Follow us on X at Broomsticks B. Follow us on Instagram at Broomsticks B Podcasts. We are also Broomsticks B on Blue Sky. Let me see how the Blue Sky numbers are doing. Hadn't been a lot of movement on Blue Sky lately. And that's probably my fault because I have not been engaging
what?
With the fans as much as I should be. 733. followers. I'm going to go ahead and follow back a couple people here because I'm a nice guy. So follow us on Blue Sky as well. Facebook, just look up Broomsticks and Butterbeer, and you can follow us and message us on Facebook. You message us on any of those platforms. That's how we got to know K-Tape Emily was through message on Blue Sky. So shout out K-Tape Emily. Let us know if there's any new advancements in the world of kinetic tape. We're waiting with bated breath.
Yeah. I don't know that we're using it right.
Well, she told us we weren't using it right. She's prepared to give you methods to improve your life, and you just won't listen.
I listen.
You're a K-tape denier.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was you.
Oh, yeah, it is me, 100%. But we still love Emily.
Also, hi to Bobby, because he always likes our stuff on Facebook.
Bobby's the man.
Like, you post something, and Bobby's there.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. He's kind of like our hype man. Mm-hmm. Like our Flavor Flav. He comes out with the big clock on his chest, and he's getting the crowd all hyped up and, you know, engaging people for us. So, yeah, that's Bobby.
Bobby.
Yeah.
He just did that.
So, connect with us on those platforms so we can connect with you back. And if you are listening to us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on, give us a review and let us know how we're doing. If it's a negative review, just keep your thoughts to yourself.
Yeah.
Because there's enough negativity in the world.
I was going to say that. We don't need any more negativity. If you saw us at Van Expo, say hi.
Yeah.
Say hi.
Yeah. So shout out to the Inner Circle, Jennifer, Catherine, Amelia, Jane, Ronnie, Anastasia, Kelly, Olivia, Jenny, and...
Baby Emma.
Hold on.
Sorry.
Our newest addition, Baby Emma.
The Inner Circle is going to get too big with these ladies.
Well,
just
these
keep popping out
ladies
kids.
Need to stop having babies every
I know.
Couple
it was
months.
Like constant.
Catherine's next.
Yeah, it's her turn.
She keeps denying it, but come on now.
She's probably like 6 months along.
Yeah, I'm sure she is.
She just doesn't want to tell us.
That's why we only see her face on
the Zoom
calls. So shout out to the Inner Circle. Shout out to everybody listening, downloading, subscribing, spreading the word. Shout out to my coworker Becky at school, who's been loving the podcast. It's probably gonna be a long time till she hears this one. Because she told me the other day that she always tells me how much she enjoys the podcast. She absolutely loves it. She absolutely loves the banter back and forth. I said, stick with it. It gets better.
Yeah.
Because we get sound effects. We get better microphones. We go on excursions and talk about them on the show. I think she's finishing up still season one.
Nice.
So
she's got a long way to go,
but it gets better.
You'll be retired and gone from the school before
Absolutely.
She gets to this.
God, I hope so. That day can't come soon enough. I need to get like a countdown and put it on the wall so I know down to the second when I get to retire. But we love the Inner Circle and we love the Outer Circle as well. We love all the circles.
All the circles.
We love all of the.
What about the squares? Do we love squares?
We all love all the polygons as well.
Okay.
We love geometric shapes of all shapes and sizes.
Do you know what I like best?
What do you like?
Swirls.
Swirls. I don't know if that counts as a geometric shape.
Oh, it's a shape.
All right. We're accepting of everybody here. Because you know how I always say, be a wizard, be a witch, be a muggle, be a squib, be a swirl. But don't be a jerk.
Or a git.
And we'll see you next time for the final chapter. And movie review. And compare and contrast of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince next time on Broomsticks and Butterbeer. Until then, I'm Dan Rhino.
I'm Jessica Rhino.
See ya.
Bye. They're reaching